The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight, with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Howdy, folks. Major Fedlex here. No song right now, just a message. Who will Donald Trump attack today? Every day Donald Trump attacks America. He sends out hate-filled tweet after hate-filled tweet aimed at his fellow Americans. He disparages war heroes, judges, prosecutors, union members, handicapped people, soldiers, teachers, Jews, Muslims, women, immigrants, and those struggling over their sexuality. All of them his fellow Americans. He attacks those who work hard every day to do the best they can to help their families and America to be better, stronger, safer, more stable, and more equitable as a nation. He attacks those who donate blood, those who build homes for the poor, volunteer at a homeless shelter, coach the Little League team, bake cookies for the school bake sale, visit the disabled veterans, act as volunteer drivers for the elderly, and deliver meals on wheels to shut-ins. He preys on the vulnerable, weak-minded, and desperate, getting them to pay $90,000 a day in legal bills for his transgressions, for his sexual assaults, for his tax cheating, for his fraud and mismanagement, for his slander, for his attempt to steal an election, for his frivolous lawsuits, for his endless appeals to try to run out the clock and to undermine the rule of law. He convinces these folks that he considers suckers and losers, to buy trading cards, bits of his old suits, Bibles, and stock in a valueless company. And day after day, after spreading his hate to every corner of our nation, he claims that he is the real victim and he is the innocent who has suffered unfairly. Then he says that Joe Biden, liberals, and the news media are the true enemies of the people, while he is more like Jesus, who healed the sick, cared for the afflicted, fed the poor, and whose main message was one of love, forgiveness, and inclusion. Anyone who believes that this hideous black hole of stupidity, hate, and grievance is any kind of savior is nothing but a brainwashed cultist, and I feel sorry for him. Thanks for listening.
So, a little bit different today, right? We usually have Mangy Fetlocks with a funny song, not a parody, because he does original songs every day. That's his real name is Bruce W. Nelson, but he's got this alter ego, Mangy Fetlocks, who does these songs. Today, no song. Just a little bit of commentary that I agree with wholeheartedly. We are living in violent times. And unfortunately, the guy who heads up the Republican Party, if there is such a thing anymore, is he likes to go on the attack. Now, I was actually going to do a different show today. I didn't have a guest booked. And I get it from all angles. And I think as a world, it's not just this nation, but as a planet, the temperature has risen, and I'm not talking about climate change. I'm talking about our, what's the way to put it? Our persona, our penchant for violence is it's omnipotent. It's everywhere. And you know what they say about a fish? It rots from the head down or something like that. I'm not good at analogies like that. But the Republican Party is what it is today because Donald Trump has given people permission to embrace their inner asshole. And Donald Trump is the ultimate one. So I am making an effort to not let my the steam escape from my ears and make me lash out reactively when someone comes at me. Because, you know, the latest was somebody who attacked me on Twitter yesterday said that she used to be a fan, but can't listen to me anymore because I don't even know. I should pull up the tweet or not. You know, I was going to talk about this. I was going to, I implored her, if you want to have a conversation, let's have a conversation, but don't, you know, just attack me on Twitter. She can't listen anymore because I'm too lazy to learn the facts. And so she finally emailed me and she sent me a whole slew of disinformation. You see, if you're going to send something out like that, check your facts. You know, when she started in with, oh, there were IDF paratroopers flying Apache helicopters on October 7th at the music festival gunning down kids, that's when I had enough. Do not go there. Now, I am devastated to hear that seven workers for Jose Andres World Central Kitchen were killed by Israeli forces. Netanyahu said it was a mistake. Yeah, the whole thing is a fucking mistake. I said I wasn't going to do this today. Well, we will do this another day. By the way, I did try to call to Israel. I'm not doing it live on the air because they're 7 hours ahead of us. And it's midnight there, so I'm not going to call people at midnight. I did try to call earlier. I got a couple of people at hotels. One said, I'm not the person to talk to. Try someone else. Another said, oh, it's already almost 9 o'clock at night. Call back tomorrow during the day and I'll talk to you. And I got a lot of numbers that didn't go through. But, you know, it's really increasingly more and more difficult to fact check everything in real time, because there's so much bullshit being spread from all quarters. I don't like to get stuff wrong. And when I get it wrong, I am eager to correct the record. I welcome someone proving me wrong, because usually when I report on something, it's pretty heinous and I don't like the fact that this happened. In this case, October 7th happened. What also happened is Israel's response, which should have surgically taken out Hamas, but it's hard to do when they headquarter themselves among the civilian population and in the tunnels that they build with the relief money, you know, under hospitals and schools. So it's difficult. But what this whole conflict has served to do, other than kill a lot of people who were not involved, is it ratcheted up those old anti-Jewish sentiments, which were already bubbling under the surface. They have been for eternity. But again, Donald Trump gives his sycophants permission to be fucking assholes. And that's where we are today. Everything is an attack. Everything is violent. Anybody who has half a brain, who knows the landscape, is predicting that this year will be riddled with political violence. And when you have somebody like, you know, the former guy saying shit like this, hey, Spocko, hold on a minute. I'm going to play a video, but it's on the same pot that you're on. So,
okay.
Okay. So just hold on. I'm going to actually mute you. And I'm going to play this video real quick. I went look and I didn't spend any time putting this together. I did a search for supercuts of Donald Trump violent rhetoric. And you know what? There's a ton of it.
Well, I certainly don't incite violence. I don't condone violence. I don't talk about violence.
So if you see somebody getting ready to throw a tomato, knock the crap out of them, would you? Seriously. Okay? Just knock the hell. I promise you, I will pay for the legal fees. I promise.
And you know what? The audience swung back. And I thought it was very, very appropriate.
Get out of here. Get out. Out! Try not to hurt him. If you do, I'll defend you in court. Don't worry about it.
He was so obnoxious and so loud. He was screaming. He should have been, maybe he should have been roughed up, because it was absolutely disgusting what he was doing.
That will never happen with me. I don't know if I'll do the fighting myself or if other people will.
Oh, God.
If your words can inspire them to cheer, to go to the polls and vote, to speak out for you, don't you think your words in some way can inspire them to violence and incite violence as well?
Of course he does.
Don't you understand that you can't say in one tone,
no,
well, I'm getting people
I,
to vote for
I
me,
don't,
but my words have meaning, but then
violence.
On the other hand, my words
she don't
have
talk
meaning
about
when
violence.
It comes to another particular issue.
Bullshit.
Yeah, well, I certainly don't incite violence, and I certainly would. I don't condone violence.
He's walking out like big high fives, smiling, laughing, like to punch him in the face, I'll tell
like
you.
To punch you in the face.
I love the old days. You know what they used to do to guys like that when they were in a place like this? They'd be carried out on a stretcher, folks. In the good old days, this doesn't happen because they used to treat them very, very rough. And when they protested once, you know, they would not do it again so easily. I wanted to hit a couple of those speakers so hard.
Oh, my goodness.
I would have hit them. No, no. I was going to hit one guy in particular.
Of course you
a
were.
A very little guy. I was going to hit this guy so hard, his head would spin.
God.
He wouldn't know what the hell happened. He had four guys. They jumped at him. They were swinging and swinging.
I'm waiting for one particular clip.
The next day, we got killed in the press.
I wonder
that we
why.
Were too rough. Give me a break. You know, right? We don't want to be too politically correct anymore, right, folks? Any guy that can do a body slam, he's my kind. But I had heard that he body slammed a reporter. And he was way up, and I said, oh, this was like the day of the election or
yeah,
just
governor
before.
Of Montana.
And I said, oh, this is terrible. He's going to lose the election. Then I said, well, wait a minute. I know Montana pretty well. I think it might help him. Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment.
Bullshit.
By the way, and if she gets to pick.
Oh, here you go.
If she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is. I don't know.
All right. That's the clip I was waiting for. And it goes on. I won't subject you to the rest of it. But I wanted that Second Amendment people. Maybe you could do something about it. Who says something like that? I'll tell you who does. The guy who is the presumptive Republican nominee for the presidency after we already lived through 4 years of him in the White House. Didn't he do enough damage that kind of rhetoric is normalized? And today's, you know, every day I put together a show card, a graphic to run with each day's show. Today's, I pulled out a magazine cover from National Lampoon magazine from 1973. Now, some kids listening may not know that this was a real magazine cover. But all you have to do is say, National Lampoon will shoot this dog. This was, in January of 1973, an actual National Lampoon magazine cover. If you don't buy this magazine, we'll kill this dog. And there's a picture of a scared-looking black-and-white dog, border collie, I guess, with a gun to its head. Now, this was okay because it was obviously humor. They weren't going to kill the dog. Today, though, we have Donald Trump inciting people to kill the damn dog. And now it has spread to court personnel and their families. Now, it was just, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago. I thought I pulled this video, but maybe I closed the window. I don't know. There was a judge, her name, Judge Solis, I believe, who was overseeing, and I must have closed the window. Damn it, I hate when I do that. Her son, she was threatened by a defendant in her courtroom. And bottom line is, this guy shot at her family. Her son was killed. I think her husband was mortally wounded. This is where we are. And I will put it all at the feet of Donald Trump, because he gave these fringe people who were separated by, you know, miles across the country, who never had a way or a reason to connect with one another. Well, now there's the internet and there's Donald Trump and these stupid rallies. He's given them permission to embrace their inner thug. And the internet brought us all together and the pandemic escalated it. And here's where we are. So now I'll bring Spocko's mic up. Hey, Spocko, you there?
Yes. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. So our pal Spocko, who also is an activist and a blogger, and he does write regularly over at Digby's blog, digbysblog.net. And he's been in my ear lately saying these threats, what are they doing about the threats? And you know, something's got to be done. So Spocko now has the piece up at Digby's. The headline reads, a 600% increase in threats. Hey, DOJ, where are the arrests? Is anybody arrested from making a threat?
Yes, some people are, but not enough. First, I wanted to say something. I'm down here in Fremont, California, which is the happiest city on earth, I've been told. I mean, in the United States. And I'm taking care of my my in-laws, my Pulitzer Prize-winning mother-in-law and my nuclear scientist father-in-law, both of which are ones in the ER right now. But I want to shout out to all people who are caregivers out there, because I know it's a really hard job. And if I have to pop up and pop out to take care of something, I'll let you know.
So. Absolutely, I understand. Family, you know, it's that's the top priority. You know, I mentioned that I was going to reach out to Aswin Subasang from Rolling Stone, because he broke a few stories on this subject, and his response to me was, can't do it today, kid is sick. And, you know, my response is, sorry, I get it, cuddles help.
Well, I'm really glad that you did that, because in my piece, I link to the Rolling Stone Rolling Stone's article. And I want to just say that I talk about, and I've been writing about this for a long time, and my piece in Digby this time, I wanted to let people know what are the things that can change and have changed, and that we can, I don't want to say agitate, but what we can do to actually deal with this. And some of the things that what is being done to actually deal with this. And today I've been following all the details about the threats and the gag orders, et cetera, and that'll be parsed to, you know, to 50,000 feet. But one of the things I wanted to focus on, I don't know if you included that clip, but I wanted to focus on the Rolling Stones article, specifically Jenna Griswold, mm-hmm. the Colorado Secretary of State.
Yep.
And if you could play those two clips, that one that's a minute long that has both of them. In this, she talks about the scale and scope of the threats. And then she talks about how it is important for people to understand that these are not policy decisions. And she makes them real. So those are the two things. If you could play those, and then we can talk about this. Is that okay?
Right. Yep. Just one second. I have the, hold on. Let me try one other thing. I have the one with Jenna Griswold speaking. For some reason, Windows keeps doing things and not letting me. I usually like download videos and then I play them right from my computer. Well, it's not letting me do that anymore. It wants me to play right from YouTube or something. Here's this is part two. Hold on. Let me find the first one so we do it in order. I got it right here. That's not the one. This must be
just
okay.
For context for people while you're looking at this. She was on the Chris Hayes show and talking about this. And that's the thing about these segments. And I want to talk about the role of the media in this.
Yep.
Typically, the segments, she comes on, people come on, they might play a video and they might say, repeat some of the threats. But this one was different, just like a previous one was different. And it's because they didn't feel like the DOJ was doing enough. And so they went to the media, went to Rolling Stones and said, this is how bad this is. And then they did the story and then she went on. Okay.
Okay. So here's the first clip. I gotta do that and do play it here.
Which is that Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, who supported the effort to bar Trump from the ballot in her state under the 14th Amendment, has seen a 600% increase in serious threats against her and her family. The escalating torrent of abuse and violent threats is based on data Rolling Stone magazine received from Griswold's office, including emails declaring, quote, "We are coming for you," and voicemails saying, quote, "I hope you effing die. I hope your effing family dies."
Nice. So that was the first one. And then the second one, I'm just going to leave that up on the screen and you guys can bear with me. Here's the second one.
The threat atmosphere really changed after the insurrection. That's when I started to receive death threats. And death threats aren't just like, oh, I am upset at your policy.
Right.
They're threats to your life. Since September, when this case was filed by six voters in Colorado, we just saw a huge uptick. These are people telling me in very explicit terms how they are going to kill me, hang me,
Whoa.
Rape me, kill my family,
oh, God.
And torture me based on misinformation and lies.
So, Spocko, there are those two clips. That is Jenna Griswold. She is the Secretary of State of the state of Colorado, and the Secretary of State is the one in charge of elections.
And then we'll go to the next one a little bit, but I wanted those to be clear because there's two things that happen that I've seen, and I'm always thinking about, you know, our audience versus, you know, other types of audiences,
mm-hmm.
which is what can it made clear to us, like, how are we being sucked into not understanding how big this threat is? And this particular case reminded me very much of, remember when Judge Engoron's clerk got all those threats?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I had it in my piece. It was Lisa Rubin was going on and she was talking about it. And I followed up on how this came about because I talk about this with Glenn Kirshner every week, you
mm-hmm.
know, and I ask him, I say, who is it that follows up on these threats and how many are they? And biggest, it's like, and he says, this is a problem. And what happened was in the case of Judge Engoron's, the Department of Safety for the New York court systems had a special unit that kept track of all the threats. And they then put those together, counted them, and the metric, the number that you would hear, which was kind of blew people away in the media, which was they had 275 pages of transcribed voicemails of the threats. Okay, so that's the first
yes.
thing. And then they're just kind of like, whoa. And the thing that I see about the media, and I've written about this before, which is they are not particularly good at wanting to go after people who make threats. And we see it, and I've seen it in Chris Hayes before multiple times. They always bring up, well, you know, as a DA, you should expect to get some incoming. And it's I think we should be able to criticize people. The reason that I like that Jenna clip, which was where she says, this is not a policy criticism, all right?
Mm-hmm.
These are the kinds of threats where they want to kill me, okay? So I needed to shut the media down on that end, okay? The second thing to look at, which is, okay, then they say, we took all these threats. Then the next part, which is, and this is another part that people fall into, which is, well, I believe in free speech, etc. You need to parse what is a death threat and the difference between the level of the death threat, etc. The law enforcement doesn't want to do that. Okay. They throw that out. They just say, oh, that's, you know, it's too complex and we have to, and it's going to be hard to, did they break any laws, etc. What Jenna's office did was they looked at all those threats and they said, clearly these ones rise to the level of criminality. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now that is something law enforcement can go, oh, okay, well, they broke the law. It doesn't mean that those aren't, all the other threats aren't huge, but they don't break a law. And that's another problem. Now, one of the things that they have done, the secretaries of states in Colorado, they've passed laws to make it so that harassing and doxing of election workers is illegal. It breaks a law.
Hmm.
So then law enforcement.
That's just in Colorado because, frankly,
yes.
you know, when Marcy Wheeler was here on Friday, we were talking about this very issue and Trump threatening the judge and his daughter and stuff. And we were talking about what, you know, what there are laws against. And she said, well, the First Amendment is there and protects speech. And I said, but isn't doxing illegal? And she said, no, Doxing is not illegal. So I guess now it is in Colorado when you're talking about public officials. But maybe they have to get that specific.
So, and this is the other thing, which is when there are roadblocks, because I'm always looking at what are the roadblocks. One of the roadblocks first is going to be people need to understand how huge the scale and scope is. Second, that these are serious and they need to be addressed. Okay. Mm-hmm. The third is the definitions. And this was where I was, I kind of wish that I'd been available to, you know, call in with Barb when Barb McQuaid was, because I think that she's been good about helping people understand that we in America are particularly vulnerable to be sucked into this dismissal of threats, downplaying it. And I like to tell people to understand that we're living in a world of very, I don't want to say sophisticated trolls, but people who know the tricks to get away with things. So like, for example, they say, well, I was just joking. Or yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah,
a joke is supposed to be funny. Just right. For anyone who ever says, I was just joking. No, a joke is funny. There's nothing funny about a threat.
And the reason that people like, you know, us and people on the radio and stuff like that, we want to get into the defense of that because we know that we could end up being accused of things that were clearly a joke. Mm-hmm. And the other side understands that they use that against us. They're like going, well, you said that we should fight. Here's all the Democrats saying we should fight back. And that's one of the ways that we need to use this definitional part of it. Understand the difference between a death threat and an intent, etc. So that's a part of is the definition. On our end, the other thing that we need to do is saying, look at why things are not done. Why weren't there enough prosecutions? Now, the thing that we find out is, you see, it's a huge problem. You find out that they are true threats, the threats that are very violent. The next step is what happens to them then? Mm-hmm. Now, what is the standard procedure for these kind of threats is they go to law enforcement. And the law enforcement said, that's terrible. But don't talk about it. Don't tell anybody how huge it is. And we'll take care of it. We'll go find these people and arrest them. In my article, I link to this brilliant piece, the Campaign of Fear of Reuters. And it's Linda So and I forget the other guy, Josh. Those articles are so important because they call up the people who the law enforcement has dismissed as true threats.
Uh-huh.
They said, we can't find them. Or they were just, we can't get a hold of them. Or they're dismissed it as political speech. They went to experts and said, are these in fact, violent threats that would violate the law? And their expert says, yes. So then they called up these people to see what a lot of them still thought, I didn't do anything wrong. And then you'd read the threats back to them as like, the other group of them, which is where they're gaslighting you, is when they're busted, they're going, I was just joking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you do about those? Well, the Reuters story was interesting because one of the guys just doubled down and he started threatening the reporters and he started going after them. Those are the kinds of stories. And eventually they turn that back over to law enforcement and said, the person that you didn't think was a threat is now threatening us. Here's the evidence that we have to prove that he intended to do it. It wasn't a joke. He means it and he's a threat. Okay.
Right.
I looked at this and I said, why doesn't more of this happen?
Well, and it seems, Spocko, that they're prosecuted haphazardly. Like, do you remember the guy? I think it was Cesar Sayas. He was in Miami. He had the van with all the stickers. Mm-hmm. And I believe he was prosecuted. But did he go somewhere with a bomb? I'm trying to remember what it was. Did he have a physical attack that he was guilty of? Or was it just the
threats? Yeah. He put out bombs.
Oh, that's right. He sent bombs. Right.
And this is a thing, again, with law enforcement, where if they have something physical or a bomb or something, they can do something. Where it falls apart when the threats are cross-country, over the internet, just on social media, or there's not a local threat. So what do we do about those? And there is a solution. There is something that can be done, but it's not being promoted enough. And this is funny. I was talking to my friend Bill, and I said, the Election Threats Task Force, even though they haven't done enough, frankly, they have had some big successes, and a couple of them in Arizona. I was going to, tell you all about some of those.
Yes.
But they didn't have any photos and no mugshots of the guy they put away.
Yeah, well, there is. You have one in the article. You have up at Digby's place. With a guy who pled guilty. But let me tell you a story about Goltz, I guess is his name. Goltz wants out of jail after threats of killing children, Jews, election workers. Great. But, you know, we moved here to Arizona for a number of reasons. One is David's son lives here and, you know, he went to ASU, as did David, and Max, his son, stayed here. And, you know, over the last 10, 12 years, I've maybe seen him 3 or 4 times. And so, you know, wanting to get out of Florida, this was a logical place to come because we have family. Well, Max's significant other happens to be the deputy elections director for Maricopa County. She works crazy hours, but I'm not so concerned with the hours she works. I'm more concerned with security because that was ground zero in 2020 for the crazies who came out, and they're still out there. It's apparently a very secure campus where she works, but it still scares the hell out of me knowing that this is where she is and knowing that this is going to be an ugly year, uglier than I think we've encountered before, just from the evidence we've seen so far.
Right. So what do we do for a deterrence? So that's one of the other thing is, how do you, when somebody does get arrested, convicted, goes to trial, it should be a big deal that it happens. Okay, that you show people this is not acceptable. This is what will happen to you if you do this. Okay. And my friend Bill said, you know, when cops have a huge drug bust, they'll show the photo of the guy that they busted. They have the big pile of 600 pounds of cocaine and all the weapons. When they put out these stories from the Election Threat Task Force, they had an incredibly boring press conference with bad audio, which, you know, drives me nuts.
Right. And I do have the clip. So this is the Election Safety Task Force is part of the DOJ. They know that this is an issue was it an issue before Donald Trump?
Not at this level at all.
No. Yeah, I didn't think so. All right. So here's the clip. So this is the head of that Election Safety Task Force at the DOJ.
But death threats are not debate. Death threats do not contribute to the marketplace of ideas. Death threats are not First Amendment protected speech. Death threats and any threats of violence are condemnable criminal acts, and they will be met with the full force of the Department of Justice.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear, but is it I mean, do
it's
we
not
have...
enough. Did you hear about this?
No.
Nobody heard about it.
No.
Yeah. I follow this stuff. And what did they do? They put out a press release. And so I thought, well, it's just me because I'm, you know, from the PR side. And I remember this is one of the things that I kept saying is like the DOJ, they have to be, you know, we were fair. We don't want to, you know, say like, you know, gloat and, you know, what do you call, spike the football after we won. You're in jail, damn it.
All right.
On the civil sides, for example, the lawyers for E. Jean Carroll, after they win their case, they can, like, you know, promote it, go a big deal about it. But the DOJ doesn't want to do this. And it's kind of ridiculous because, just like, you know, my friend Bill said, if you're going to have a program, a campaign to deter crime, you need to have promotion. You need to publicize it. You need to say, you know, the guy who made these phone calls, he is now in jail. So here's the thing that I, you know, again, what can we do? How can we agitate? One, the press isn't going to necessarily do it if they get nothing to work with. I mean, they didn't even have a photo of these guys. What can we do? Like what the Secretary of State of Colorado did. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, your new Secretary of State for Arizona, he complained about the election task force as well. He said they put out a press release. I mean, that's it. Nobody knows about it. It should have been a big campaign, so big that only even Fox News would say, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
I followed that case really closely. I read all the documents, the court cases. He used all the various different tricks that they'll try and use, gaslighting, say, well, I was just hyperbole, et cetera. But what was great about the case, and they could have used this, they could have made it very clear that his you know, excuses don't work, and now he's in jail. His excuses like, well, I'm in another state, and I wasn't going to do anything. One, the guy was sending threats, not only threatened to kill election officials, but their kids. And one of the things they say, well, he's in Lubbock, Texas, and he made these threats against somebody in Arizona. Where did he do the threats? On right-wing social media, patriot.win and gab.com. Mm-hmm. He didn't do it over Twitter. He didn't email. So that's another place where things fall down, which is like, well, you know, it's not real life. At the time, the people in Arizona, they didn't know if the threat was going to happen.
Right.
So one of the people who was, I think, is the recorder from from Arizona, he had his kids wear bulletproof vests when they came home for Thanksgiving.
Oh, they were issued
bulletproof vests because local police, they don't know what to do when they found out, oh, the guy's in another state. Well, we should not worry enough. No, this is ridiculous because that's the kind of way that the threat works is it changes people's behavior, especially when they don't know if it's where it's from or who it is. So what did they do? They finally, and they turned this over to the election task force, threat task force, because they have the resources, they have the budget, and they followed through. They found the guy, arrested him, put him in jail, and he had time in jail, but it takes time, okay? Mm-hmm. What would you do if you knew that the guy who threatened to kill your kids was, you know, trying to say, I didn't mean it. Okay. They've had, what witness statements are, you know, where they have the people come in and say victim statements.
That's right. Victim statements. Yeah.
I think that this was really important, which is one of the people came in and said, I'm not, you know, it's not okay. You just scared the hell out of us, the entire office. People are quitting over this. This had a major impact on us, okay? And you need to be, you know, punished. And whether or not they're contrite, because sometimes they are, they need to understand that this is a serious offense, and it's not just joking on right-wing social media blowing off steam.
Right.
But and nobody sees that. And so that would be the other thing that we need to do, which is when we have the latest threats, like Judge Engoron's threats or the new threats like that, tell me the stories of all the people who then got arrested and are convicted from the earlier threats. They don't do this. Again, this is a failure of both, you know, the PR and the, you know, DOJ, because it doesn't become a priority. So that's a failure.
Let's for a second here talk specifics, because in this case, what happened was the trial that is set to begin in less than 2 weeks, April 15th, that is the election interference trial in New York that included the hush money payoff to Stormy Daniels. But it's more than just the hush money that people who do messaging are telling us, don't call it the hush money trial, because that implies that it's more minor than it is. He was trying to screw with an election by shutting up a person potentially derail it. So Donald Trump is doing his usual and attacking the judge. It's Judge Merchan, right? Not only attacking him, but his daughter. And what's it in question here is she used to have a Twitter account back when it was Twitter. Apparently she deleted it a couple of years ago. It hasn't been active in a long time. Someone else, when you delete your account, it frees up the handle so someone else can take it. Someone else took it. They're essentially squatting on her former thing. That's why you don't ever delete your account. You can delete all the data in it, but keep the account so no one else can use your name. So Trump started smearing the daughter, a woman named Lauren, and so, you know, Marcy and I talked about this on Friday, that the attacks on her had to be a violation of this gag order. Well, the gag order was kind of limited, so it did not include family members of court personnel. That's when the judge yesterday went back in and strengthened it. And apparently it was, I haven't read the thing, but it's what, like 25 pages, and it's packed full of specifics. And he is not to mention the family members of anybody. And it goes deeper than that. But what did Trump do? He immediately reshared a clip accusing her of putting things on her Twitter account that were detrimental to his case or whatever, and accusing her of, you know, being some big Democratic Party operative and working for Kamala Harris and whatever else. And then he wrote, this was last week, in a caption to Tuesday's post, yesterday's, Trump made no mention of Lauren Merchant directly. Instead, he highlighted Jonathan Turley's comments, the lawyer who used to appear with Keith Olbermann, who's now a Trumper and a Fox regular, highlighted his comments saying the reputation of the New York legal system is at stake, but included more than just those comments in a 6-minute clip that apparently today is still pinned to his Truth Social profile. So when do they say this is a violation of the gag order? And when he does, which he inevitably will violate it, what do they do about him? Do they lock him up?
Yes. You know, when I say these kinds of things, it is almost like we need to keep saying that this is what the law allows.
That's right.
Right. It is not just, it's too much and he's this or that. And that's, you know, Glenn Kirshner has been saying that very clearly. What I think the other part of this is, in terms of, it is almost like this little game that they play. He knows, and the people know what's happening around him. And so he, you know, they say he comes up to the line and then he crosses and he gets a fine, et cetera. One of the things that I also like to point out, that particular case you mentioned, so this is an identity theft case, and it brings up the other part of it, which is the coordination and the support that Trump has gotten from people who are helping him with these kinds of threats. And what can we do about this? Now, of course, when you've got somebody like Elmo, who's now in charge of Twitter, who, you know, he won't follow his own terms of service, and he enables this, it reminds me of, so what can be done in some of the other social media, things like that, and what should be their penalties if they don't? And this is another tool of that can be used in order to get it to stop, which is, okay, Twitter, they know, they can find out fairly easily who it was who hacked into that account and created that. That person should be arrested, and find that person's connections. Where is that person connected from? This is another area that I feel like it is not addressed, and it's kind of blown off. And I see this because people, it's social media, it's too huge and we can't do it. That's bullshit.
Well, you need the law, and that's why they've had those hearings. But I'm going to show a picture. you've all met my husband, David. So David was, his Facebook account was restricted because he posted this photograph. If I can put it up on the screen. Hold on. I'm going to bring it up right here. And it's a photograph of, there's Donald Trump sort of gazing, looking at Vladimir Putin while Hitler is over Trump's shoulder. It's just a weird picture. The reason they restricted his account, what would you think, Spocko? I don't know if you're seeing this or not.
Promoting Vladimir Putin as sexy. Maybe that would be
right. Well, close. Actually, close. This the photo is sexualized.
Was
why they restricted his account. Worry about the threats being made. Don't worry about some stupid meme photo of Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, and Adolf Hitler. That's not hurting anybody. It's just a picture. God damn it.
I'm actually glad you brought that up, because this is one of the things that happens, which is, when somebody like Facebook, they'll say, they're told, hey, you need to do more. So what do? They don't want to spend the money on going through these kind of things. So they'll crank up the algorithm, okay? And they'll get more false positives, and you get people like, you know, this is bullshit, this is a joke. Like, but what they don't do, what we don't hear about, is, you know, the right wingers who, they get their violent things taken down, because they're not going to complain about it. I mean, they might, okay?
Right.
But the next level is what we've learned from the Facebook Francis Hugen, the whistleblower, is that they are very aware of how people avoid these things. They'll use different tricks. But also, there's a whole subcategory of people who are allowed to spread disinformation and threats and stuff because they are protected. And the big group of them was the people from Breitbart. They had internal protection. Their people violated, their articles violated the threats standards, community mm-hmm. standards. Mm-hmm. But every time their internal people at Facebook said do something, they were overruled because somebody at the Mercer people said, hey, Breitbart are our people, and we're going to, you know, scream that it's censorship. Okay. So what do we have happen next? Okay. So, my friends from the Center for Countering Digital Hate, they put a whole program together to show that people at Facebook, they generate revenue from anger. And I think, I believe that McWay talked about that, which is, you know, the angry emoji gets, you know, four times more, you know, power. What Frances Hugen said, talked about, she said, people at Facebook, their bonuses are tied to engagement, okay, this person violated the law, this person is protected, but they're very engaging, and I get my Christmas bonus if we keep them in, all right? So there's no negative incentive to get them to stop. So that's where we say, okay, modifications to Section 230 is one thing. Why is it that they are allowed to generate revenue from these threats? Okay. So what can we do on that one? One, you know, the lobbyists, we fight those kind of things. I like to go more specific because I always like to develop programs that people can use. People, you know, people who are being threatened can use, and they can go after the people who profit from it. All right. So in this particular case, and I think I've talked about this before, Ammon Bundy and he and his right wing nutballs. Yep. The militia movement, they were threatening people at a hospital, St. Luke's Hospital in Boise, Idaho. And they started the whole process with shutting down the hospital during a false, you know, saying that they're, you know, some one of the people with his movement, one of their kids was taken away, some kid for reasons of child health, like the kid was malnutrition, etc. They shut down the hospital, and the hospital, and I read this whole story about it. The hospital had to shut down their life flights. Why? Because people with guns were surrounding the hospital and the hospital helicopter was afraid they'd be shut down. Okay. Oh, so I talked to the lawyers for St. Luke's and I said, you know, you can go for a damages, you know, like revenue that you've lost because of this as well as the people. And the criminal side, he was able to get it because it's legal to have guns in Boise, Idaho, and carry them out live. What they did is they turned it into a defamation case where they were, you know, slamming the people who were the head of St. Luke's and the people in child health care. So that's the case started that case. But I also told him, I said, you need to gather data about all the ongoing threats that they get that in addition to the defamation, because what happens, they will then turn it into this, a way to make money. The people from, they use YouTube to coordinate and generate revenue. Mm-hmm. They use the threats in order to gather new recruits. So I know from the people who were, you know, part of this, they said they use the understanding of how social media works and how the media works, and they organize and they gather and they basically conspire to threaten people, defame people, and generate revenue. So the case then turned into a case of basically kind of a conspiracy, kind of like a RICO case, only on the civil side. They went after not just Ammon Bundy, but the people that got money from it, like his super PAC.
Uh-huh.
They went after the people who were his organization, his people for, you know, whatever his organizations were, and the other person who was there. And they went to the judge. And this is the other thing I talked about, gathering the data, showing the metrics. After Ammon Bundy said, I didn't threaten anybody, the lawyers from St. Luke's went to the judge and says, here's 300 pages of the kinds of threats that our people got. Uh-huh. And they all came from Bundy's people. And how do we know this? Because We have the data from YouTube. We have the data from social media shows that they're all linked, okay?
Yeah.
They won the case. It was a huge case, $52 million. Bundy had to pay. This other guy who was the grandfather of the kid had to pay. Bundy's super PAC had to pay. Bundy's organization had to pay millions of dollars. And so now it's kind of like,
I wonder if they did, though. I wonder if they did. See, this is the thing. Look, you had Alex Jones, who's on the hook for close to $1 billion, hasn't paid a dime. He filed bankruptcy and hasn't paid the Sandy Hook victims' families a dime.
You can do it. You can follow up. And this was the other thing about it. Be prepared for their tricks. The lawyers, before Bundy even got, served, they went into the media and they said, he's going to do this. He's going to try and avoid this by bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. Everybody, by the way, here's how he's trying to do it. And they did a story about him trying to do it. And they had the experts saying, okay, we attach the sale of his house because the sale of his house is part of his assets. Mm-hmm. The thing is that when you've got a big judgment like this, you've got plenty of people who have expertise, who can track this down and follow up. But just like Donald Trump, you can't totally get away with it. Even when you have enough tricks, eventually he gets something like what happened in the E. Jean Carroll case. He has to put up a bond. That's where we're at with Bundy right now. And he's hiding. But his other thing is you got to show that it was a coordinated effort, and other groups who profited from this are going to be hurt too. And then when Bundy doesn't pay or whatever, it's like, contempt of court. I mean, he might serve time in jail. But I know that a lot of times people think, well, the money isn't it. The money can be a deterrent.
Sure. Right. Right. Especially when you need it, you would think for Trump. But then, we're talking in circles here. But Trump, the bond that he had to post in order to be able to appeal this case in New York was supposed to be $454 million, the amount of the award. They lowered it to $175 million. Which he put up yesterday, probably only because Truth Social is bilking the poor Trump groupies out of their hard-earned money, and they think they're going to get a windfall, and in fact, they're going to be wiped out.
What do you think? Because I don't want to be talking in circles either. I'm always trying to look at what are the roadblocks, and then what can we do to overcome those roadblocks, and then when they, go out and throw up another way of weaseling out of it, what can we do in preparation? And I put at the end of my article a piece of it was from the movie The Untouchables, and it's the final scene in which they had Elliot Ness is in the courtroom and they knew that Capone had bought the jury,
right?
And so what Capone did was, he had the jury, he had a lot of cops on the payroll. So what Ness did is he said to the judge, switch the juries. We've got another jury that is a totally different case. And that threw, and you watch the response when Capone gets, blown away. And it was just kind of like, he was like, yeah, I'm going to get you. And like, they hold him back. This is what we need to see. We need to see some sort of satisfaction that he is getting busted. And we're not seeing this with Trump. Nope. We're not seeing it with Frederick Gultz, who's spent 3.5 years in jail. We're not seeing it with Joshua Rushell, who's got 2.5 years in jail. And that is what people need to see, because otherwise it feels like there's nothing that can be done. There's nothing that we do. It's not, there's no satisfaction.
It also feels that, Donald Trump gets away with this shit. If I did the things that he has done and is doing, we'd be locked up. There would be no question. Yet he gets away with it because of the threat that his minions will come out of their, emerge from under their bridges with weapons and take us on.
Yeah. And that is the other part of it, which is, and I've worked a lot with the people who are the anti-gun violent groups, and their use of threats is a big part of their success. And this is a big part of Trump's success. And I've written about this for years. And it's the mobification. It's the ability to use the kind of, nice kid you got there. It'd be shame if something were going to happen to him. And the way that social media has accelerated the pace and used the instantaneousness of attack, I know that I'm not an expert on how to deal with social media, but I am an expert on how to say certain kinds of messages that need to get out. And that is one of the messages that needs to get out, which is this is a beyond policy decision. This is huge. And I think there's a quote that the guy had, the head of the election task force. And we've seen this before. How do we get people to understand that this is not a free speech thing? This is
right.
This is
what you have is death threats are not debate. Death threats do not contribute to the marketplace of ideas. Death threats are not a protected constitutional right. You can scream First Amendment all you want. Making death threats, I would think, is like screaming fire in a crowded movie theater. You can't do it.
Yeah. And this is the thing, too, is like when I talk about the sophisticated people, like the nuance, it's like I have a relative who loves to play this kind of, little game. Well, the death threat, actually, it didn't rise to the level of criminality didn't meet the intent of. And I've done this kind of research and I can show that, yes, it did. Yes, you can show it. Those are the ones to focus on. You can say your gaslighting is just not going to work on these particular cases. And the fact that you're just keep playing this, it is, you're not protecting free speech. You are protecting the people who are harming us. And yes. So, and I'm kind of like, like I said, I'm talking to the experts and I'm trying to help them get their message out there, help Barb, help Glenn, help Marcy, make it clear to our side, our people's like going, these are the tricks they're using on us. Don't fall for them. Here's the way that they're using law enforcement's laziness, law enforcement's fear of going after their own people. When you find an example that is clearly against him, then you do a big deal and you make a big deal about it. Like I think Marcy had talked about this before, is the right wing. They're happy to go after the right wing. Don Bacon's wife.
Yes.
They called up his wife during the Jim Jordan speaker
hearings.
That's right. Okay.
Right.
They know who did this. They know what that was about.
Well, they got a taste of their own medicine during the whole speaker debacle. And that should have made the ones who have a half a brain or a conscience say, hey, this has gone too far. But it didn't. They're still all in the bag for Trump, knowing, even though they all know that he's a con man and a crook and unfit for office. They know who he is, but they're more power hungry than they are in favor of holding on to the democracy that we have.
And shame on them. But they have no shame.
No shame.
Digby likes to say, lack of shame is their superpower.
That is it. Spocko, we've reached the end of the hour. We've settled nothing, but I appreciate all the info you brought. This is the problem. Until Donald Trump shuts the fuck up and stops threatening people who you can go through history. I promise you, there have been some pretty despicable presidential candidates through the years. None of them has attacked his critics the way this thing has. We need to defeat Donald Trump at all costs. I've got my Biden-Harris yard sign up out in front of the house. I guess it's going to be a long 8 months, but we got work to do, people.
Spocko, we can do it.
We can do it. Tomorrow, Lisa Graves will be here.
Yay!
So it's always great when we talk with Lisa, and we got a lot of legal questions to ask her because there are many legal questions on our minds. So we'll do that tomorrow with Lisa Graves. Thank you. Thank you, Spocko. Find him at Digby's Place, digbysblog.net, on the Twitters, so sort of the shitters.
Not Twitters.
The shitter.
Mastodon. The Mastodon. Spocko at mastodon.online.
Spocko at mastodon.online. Mastodon's still too confusing for me. I'm Nicole Sandler at mstdn.social. So, who knows? I want the old Twitter back. That and I want a pony.
Subscribe. Yes.
Yes. All right. Thank you, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow. And yeah, peace out.